Welcome to this week's episode of Drive the Bid, the automotive podcast brought to you by AutoHunter.com,
your destination for online collector car auctions.
Hosted by Diego Rosenberg and Derek Shakey. Drive the Bid starts now.
Welcome, folks, to Auto Hunters Drive the Bid. I'm Diego Rosenberg, and right here we've got Derek Shakey.
That's
and
right.
We've got a guest today. I won't spill the beans just yet, but we're going to go over his history as an enthusiast and talk a little bit more about his proclivities with automobiles.
Yeah, and then, of course, cover his history with the Collector Car Network and Auto Hunter and the ClassicCars.com Journal. Now, for many of you out there, our guest requires no introduction because you might know him as you might be one of his 15,000 subscribers on his YouTube channel. You might follow his adventures on his site, Drive to Five. You might have seen him on CNBC's Jay Leno's Garage, or you might have read one of the many articles that he's written for the ClassicCars.com Journal since 2016. And for you Acura and Honda enthusiasts, there's a very high likelihood that you are familiar with our guest. For those of you that do not know who we have here with us, I'll just go ahead and get it out of the way right now. Our guest this week is Tyson Hughey. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, my friend.
Actually, he's not just a guest. He's an influencer.
Yeah, that's true. Very true.
Well, I'll take whatever credit you'll give me. So thank you.
Well, thanks for joining us.
Appreciate it. Glad to be here. I've followed the Drive the Bid podcast for a little bit, and cool to be part of the group today.
Right now we have a picture of you and your big wheel. Why don't you tell
So just by way of brief intro, I prepped a few slides to share with Derek and Diego just to kind of set the stage for my automotive life, because I am a car enthusiast or a wheeled vehicle enthusiast, I guess, for 40 plus years. This is my big wheels next to mom and dad's 1982 Chevy Cavalier. So as you'll see in my sort of automotive chronology, I started with domestic cars and my most recent acquisition was a domestic truck. So kind of full circle. No, how dare I?
Yeah. That's so, what that was. Okay.
Anyway, let's see what else is on our... Okay, here we go. Again, speaking clearly to the domestic... upbringing. There's dad's 72 Ford Gran Torino Sport. We called that car Slimer in the background because it leaked antifreeze. I have two younger brothers who are both as automotively minded as I am. And of course, mom's pride and joy, 89 Pontiac Grand Prix coupe with a 5-speed manual transmission.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, cool car. This was my dad's tradition. We would pull our vehicles onto the front lawn and help detail and clean them up. In fact, I'll never forget, probably this day, the neighbor came over and said, "Are we having a car show today in the neighborhood?" And we said, "Sure, bring it over."
Was he cranky?
No, just, it was fun. We, you know, this was a hobby that brought the family together, and it was really fed into why I became such a car fanatic. This is mom. So my story took an interesting turn in the mid-90s. I was about 14. And my mom bought this 1990 Integra GS four-door sedan automatic. And this car ignited, I guess what I would say is, a big-time passion for the Honda and Acura scene. You know, as a teenager, you're impressed by the cars that your family owns and acquires. And I loved this car. So anyway, that's, if I were to sort of attribute my entire Acura fascination with a car, it would be this one that started it all.
So your mom liked bras?
Well, this was an aftermarket one and clearly didn't fit as well as it probably an OEM accessory would have. But yeah, you have to remember this is 1996, and that was kind of the bra age, you know, these accessories. And her later car after this was a 93 Legend that had the chrome fender trim and very, you know, gaudy chrome wheels. This type of look that was in style briefly back in that era.
Mm.
And then there was my car. So like I said, I grew up driving domestics. This was a hand-me-down 86 Chevy Celebrity. Just before the podcast kicked off, we were talking about these cars because they were so heavily badge engineered by General Motors. They took this A-body platform and they stuck a Pontiac badge, a Buick badge, an Oldsmobile badge, and it basically fit a lot of purposes. This is me with my socks and sandals, which is, I think, a big time fashion faux pas nowadays. But hey, when you're 16,
well, it might make a comeback, just yeah. Like the mom jeans.
I mean, let's be honest, though. I mean, sure, it's badge engineered, but this, the body panel, probably aside of the door, the body panels look like a Chevrolet. You know, they all were different.
Totally. And this was obviously a little bit upgraded because we've got the optional vinyl roof. It had wire wheel hubcaps. The cool thing about this car as a 16-year-old was that it could seat six people comfortably. And I was one of the first people in my high school class to get my license, so I was a designated lunch runner, and we would pile all of it. It had the front seat was a bench with kind of a fold down armrest that you could legally and, you know, comfortably put three people abreast in there. So we did it, and that car, I'm not going to get into the rest of the history. I ended up buying it back a second time, and it was on the verge of junkyard status. And the last time I ran the Carfax report, this car has been off the road for over 20 years.
Oh, so, wow.
Oh, yeah, man.
Yeah.
Well, it's gone. Like most of them.
Yeah. Oh, this was not really worth reading the entire paragraph, but I put this in here because in 2011, so it'll be, I guess, 13 years ago next month, I started blogging. And a friend encouraged me. I had, at the time, I was driving an Acura Legend, and he said, you know, you do a lot of travels, you love car stuff, like why don't you just create it like a trip journal? So this was my very first blog entry, and I called it out here because I wanted to acknowledge the inspiration for that. There was a friend of mine named Jonathan Klinger who was blogging an entire year with a Ford Model A. He wanted to see what it was like to daily drive a Model A. So I gave credit here. I said, well, this friend of mine inspired me. I'm going to start a blog. And for about 10 years, I maintained this Drive to Five that Derek mentioned religiously. I was posting trip and travel updates at least weekly. This was a fun commemorative occasion in 2011, November 4th to be exact. Acura threw, as a result of that blog, their PR team got a hold of my story and said, how do you feel about coming to LA for a visit to Honda headquarters, Acura headquarters? We're going to throw you a red carpet party when your car rolls 500,000 miles. And sure, yeah, we did it. So I drove, it's a 400-mile-ish trip from where I live in Phoenix to that area. So I had to carefully plan this occasion. I had a buffer of, you know, 450 miles to get there so I could circle around the building four or five times with a cameraman in the back seat, my mom in the passenger seat. You can see her here. And everything went off without a hitch. I drove onto the carpet with 500,000.1. And they ended up, this was Jeff Conrad at the pulpit. At the time, he was the head of all Acura sales. He presented me with a certificate for free service for a year. I got some Acura swag, like an embroidered leather jacket with Drive to Five and my name on it. It was awesome. And if I didn't already have some fire within me to be an Acura fan, this stoked it, because all of a sudden I was like, these people actually appreciate their, you know, people who are committed to the brand and who are willing to drive a car that far. So this was the party. I like this one because it's my t-shirt that I wear when I buy a new car. It says, just one more car, I promise. Because, and the back of the shirt has this going on. So like, clearly it's never just one more car. I told Derek and Diego yesterday, I've owned over 50 in 26 years of driving. So ridiculous number of cars. But I picked this 92 Integra GSR. I picked this up in Seattle. I put this slide in here because this car ended up being the one, I think it might be the next slide. Yeah, this was the car that just recently was on Jay Leno's garage floor in Burbank, California. So through kind of word of mouth and some mutual automotive community friends, I got the chance to be on an appraisal segment of, it's called Behind the Bowtie. It was hosted by Jay as well as his acquaintance and friend, Donald Osborne, who does appraisals. And so I drove to Burbank for a day in my GSR. Jay drove it. They appraised the car, and it was just, it was, as a car fanatic, it was totally a day that I just wish I could replay over and over again. I had basically 3 hours of just being, having a free-for-all in Jay's garage, for lack of a, because there were two of us filmed that day. The other guy had a 1981 BMW M1, and then there was me, and the other guy was filmed first. So his production team said, oh, make yourself at home. And so I just made the rounds through Jay's garage and eventually did some on-camp stuff with him. So amazing team. Jay, you know, I don't have enough words to express how kind of appreciative I am of him and his hobby and sort of fostering that automotive love for so many people on CNBC, on his YouTube channel, and all that. Then we get to some more in-depth involvement with Acura specifically. This is John Ikeda, who's the brand general manager today. But at that time, this was a video from Acura's YouTube in 2013. I was invited to help participate in the launch of a new model. So they were coming out with a new compact sedan on a Civic-based platform called the ILX. And I did a series of videos on Acura's YouTube channel associated with the launch of that car. So this was John showing me some design elements from the exterior. And the long story short of it, which I could switch one more slide. There it is. So they ended up, a few months into that process, I got a free car. So this was my...
Wait, you got a loaner or you got a free car?
A free title in the mail.
So here's your car. Sell it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow. So it's like the money is yours.
Yeah. I've had it for now 12 years. So in June
you
of
better 20, keep it.
Yeah. Well, there's at this point, there's too much sentimental value to ever let it go. But they gave me a 2013 Acura ILX. It was a, it's got the K24 inline four iVTEC six-speed manual transmission, basically a Civic Si with an Acura badge is kind of what I described.
What would have happened if they gave you an automatic?
Well, that was never in the cards because they let me pick the spec.
Okay.
So yeah, as a matter of fact, I configured the car as you see it with the underbody kit, the spoiler, I got the accessory wheels. Basically, I was given a PDF version of the accessory pamphlet and said, tell us what you want on the car. So
nice.
Yeah.
How many miles on this?
It had 16 when I got it, June 12th of 2012.
Wait, so it was like a company car before?
Yeah, exactly. So it was, the car wore a California plate for the first year that was registered to American Honda in Torrance.
Okay.
Insured by them, maintained by them, driven by me. I put 54,000 miles on that car in 1 year. Because that, okay, so initially that was the arrangement. We're going to give you a car to blog about for a year. I didn't at that time know it was going to be forever.
Okay.
So then at the end of the year, the California tags were set to expire, and I emailed my contact in digital marketing and said, hey, you taking your car back? And he said, nope, the approvals are completed and you'll get the title in the mail. So a decade later, I'm still driving the car, has 247,000 miles on it now. It's still my daily. I have a few other cars, but this is the one that's like tried and true. 2016, I drove it to Alaska and back from Arizona. 8,000 mile trip. Alberta, the Yukon Territory, British Columbia. I saw some incredible turf. This was 4 hours north of Fairbanks on largely dirt and gravel roads at the actual entrance to the Arctic Circle. And the car... I did get some funny looks from the logging trucks and, you know, RV people about who the heck is this guy driving a, you know, compact Japanese sedan up here. And it was awesome. So came back with a little more mud than I left with, but the car was mechanically bulletproof. So.
Wow. No traction issues or any scares?
I over-planned it in terms of preparedness. I'm an Eagle Scout, and their motto is be prepared. So I had two full-size spare tires. I had a friend and I were on the trip together. He drove a Mazda 6, so we had walkie-talkie communication throughout. I had done my research ahead of time about any places we might stop for maintenance if needed, or amenities, even gas stations. Like, of course, the Alaska Highway has advanced as it should, as time has gone on. But even back in 2016, when we did that, there were stretches of upwards of a couple hundred miles at a time where there aren't services to be had. So we just got in the habit of basically refueling every chance we got. And I will say that the car was pretty flawless. So, yeah. Oh, that was my YouTube channel. So just the main landing page there. I YouTubed, I don't know, back in 2008 or 9. I've had my channel forever, but I honestly didn't put much effort into it till right around 4 years ago. We were all subject to some lockdown circumstances. And so I thought, you know what? I have a garage of some cool cars. I could just start doing a video once a week. And so here I am, basically on a pretty good cadence. I post a video every Saturday. As you can see here, it's event coverage, it's restoration coverage. I feature friends' cars, and I can kind of use the traffic or lack thereof to dictate what kind of content people want to see. So my most recent video was from an open house at here in Arizona. It's a specialty shop that focuses on performance for S2000s and NSXs. So they host an annual meet that I've covered. And yeah, so this is just kind of fun for me. 15,000 subscribers today. You know, whether or not I'll ever hit 50 or 100K, I don't know. I don't really care. It's fun for me. So, and then I told you earlier how I started domestic and I'm ending domestic. So a week and a half ago, I bought a Ford truck.
Oh, nice.
And why?
I nostalgia primarily. So first of all, I do have frequent needs to haul car seats, wheels and tires, stuff that doesn't fit easily into a sedan like the ILX. So I'm like, you know, I could use a truck, and why not let it be one that speaks to my automotive history? My dad had a ton of these. They call it the OBS, old body style Ford truck, and Chevy too has an OBS variant. This body style basically was the same from 1980 through 96. And then, of course, Ford split off its truck line into the light duty F-150 with the more rounded architecture, and then the super duty, which still continues today. So this was a 94 in brilliant blue and royal blue metallic, only 92,000 miles. It's got some, I'll classify it as grandpa garb. The fog lights I'm going to take off, the side steps, the window visors, the diamond plate toolbox.
I thought OBS was a rapper.
I don't know. Oh, no, you think of ODB?
Yeah.
Now I got to ask, this is a Power Stroke, right?
No, this is a 460 cubic inch V8.
Wow.
Oh, okay. Gas V8. Yeah. I'm sure so on a good day, it'll get
10.
7 mpg. Yeah. But it sounds like a beast. I do love the Power Stroke. I was kind of 50-50 on which I preferred. I mean, the truck's gonna see 1,000 miles a year, if that. So.
And what's this F-250?
It's a 250.
Okay, yeah. I'm learning.
Yeah. So the F series, as it were, the 150, the 250, the 350, and then I think there were even commercial grade trucks, F-450, 550.
Because you may have said it a moment ago, but it just didn't register. What registers to me is Ford truck. Mm. And that's it. So.
Yeah.
Now I'm looking at it and I realize that this is not a regular light duty car.
Yeah. I mean, an F series, to nobody's surprise, is, I think, 40 years plus America's best selling vehicle, period. Just because there's a variant for everybody. They made this thing in regular cab, super cab, quad cab, long bed, short bed, four wheel drive,
two wheel. Doesn't Chevrolet have all that too?
They do. So, but there's some, yeah, I couldn't.
I mean, there's always going to be.
For sure. For sure.
I mean, I'm speaking as someone who's not a truck guy, so I'm just kind of asking, you know.
Yeah, and I would love to see the numbers comparison as to how far Ford edged the GM trucks out. But anyway, it'll serve my purposes. It's a fun, something a little different out of my wheelhouse. You know, I can only own so many Acura Integras before it starts feeling. And even for the sake of broadening my horizons, I mean, this... you know, feeds into a little bit about what I think we might talk about here. And my experience working with the Collector Car Network and Auto Hunter exposes me to cars and trucks and SUVs and everything that are outside that tunnel vision Japanese Honda Acura realm, which I appreciate, you know. And I think any car enthusiast owes it to himself or herself to not just look at one brand. The automotive sort of community is so huge, and there are, I wish I had enough garage space to acquire one of every brand, you know, but this truck is something that I think will give me a little bit of chance to dabble in something outside my traditional realm. So I think that might be the last one. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you, Tyson.
Yeah. Yeah, so I figure your parents will love that since it's a domestic, you know?
My get dad, roots. Yeah, I already told him about that acquisition, and he's thrilled. So he's going to help me and my brother as well to kind of fine-tune it with, you know, modifying a little bit, just removing those random parts. Maybe we'll level the front end suspension-wise a little bit. We're going to have some fun with it.
So, oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah. If anybody needs help moving or, you know, towing a boat, just give me a call.
Well, now that you mention it,
yeah.
What are you doing Saturday?
Yeah, I'm waiting for those calls to come in.
Oh, yeah, they'll be coming.
Yeah.
Just wait till you get a boat.
Oh, gee. Well, yeah, that's a whole chapter that I'm not dabbling in yet, so we'll see.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if we have this. I don't know if we have the slides in the deck, but you know, you'd mentioned it before, just your history with the Collector Car Network. Particularly Auto Hunter and the ClassicCars.com journal. And yeah, you know, Tyson has written a ton of listings for AutoHunter.com as well as various articles for the ClassicCars.com journal. You'd mentioned, you know, some highlights that you'd wanted to cover. Unfortunately, I don't think we have pictures of them, but I know you've got a history with CCN going back.
Definitely. So,
8 years.
Oh, yeah, way beyond. So the car community in Arizona is pretty big, I will say. I first got connected to what was called at that time the Phoenix Automotive Press Association, PAPA for short. And it was a community of journalists who dedicated themselves to newspaper, magazine, YouTube, any kind of media. We would get together on a pretty regular basis. And it was through that group that I got connected with the Collector Car Network. It's funny, when I sat down, this book right here on the Mazda Miata is written by Larry Edsel. He was one of the individuals who I first networked with and learned about Collector Car Network, ClassicCars.com. So Larry and some of his colleagues first, you know, interacted with me that way. And then I wrote my first story for the Collector Car Journal in 2016. And it was not a feature on any car for sale or anything. It was more of a history lesson on an old a racing car. And it kind of just escalated from there. I already was a blogger, so I liked to write, and it was kind of a natural fit that we have this website that we think we could use your skills. And I started in parallel to my day job, which I work in healthcare Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, I was able to do a little bit of dabbling with my passionate hobby, which is automotive writing. And so that's kind of where we're at. But so between the Collector Car Journal and then in 2020, so July of that year, actually, I first learned that the Collector Car Network was spinning off an auction arm. So Auto Hunter was born July of that year. And, you know, here we are today, almost celebrating 4-year anniversary. But I have written about some awesome cars. I mean, they're some of it I don't feel even worthy of accurately capturing in a paragraph form. There's just so much cool stuff to talk about. One of them, and I think the highlight that I mentioned prior to the podcast was, like, there was a Coyote V8 powered 65 Mustang resto mod. Sold for $141,000 in December, just a couple months ago. And that car, it was just top to bottom, inside and out, it was just clean. Like the type of build, if I were into vintage Mustangs, that I would sell a kidney for. You know,
you always have the other one.
Yeah, right. And for 140 grand, you know, honestly, I think it was well bought. I think that car, the famous thing that people love to say, which having restored cars now, I believe you can't build it for that price. Like they're the level of effort that it takes to start a ground up or frame off restoration, especially with costs today. It's crazy. Absolutely crazy what people can spend on a restoration. So, you know, do you want to invest the blood, sweat, and tears and checkbook and doing it yourself, or buy one that's already done up?
Yeah, turnkey. Because, and that's the thing, you know, a lot of people, they'll put a ton of money into a restoration or a custom build and frequently don't get that out of it.
Yeah.
But the person who's there, you know, with the money ready to go, they make a great deal.
Totally. Yeah. And here's my thought on, like, if you're ever thinking about restoring a car, I don't go into it as a return on investment. You know, am I going to make this money back? Because the sad reality is sometimes you don't. So you have to do it. Think with your brain, not your heart, or whichever one, like, go into it with, and actually the reverse of that. If you're going to restore a car, do it because it's a passion project that you want to keep and that means something to you, not because you're going to see the checkbook at the end of it and that somebody wants to buy it from you. So same thing with buying a car. I think a lot of people come to Barrett Jackson or other collector auction venues buying cars as investments. Not a bad idea. Sometimes the car market outperforms your 401k, but to me, that's kind of a misguided reason to get into the hobby. Go buy a car because it's one that captures your heart and soul, not because 3 years from now, when you decide to part ways, you're going to make a profit on it.
Yeah, and so, you've had it hermetically sealed and you've never driven it. And
that's just it. And I even hesitate to buy low mileage cars lately because it just, you feel guilty every time you run it down the block, you know, and this hobby, life's too short. Famous last words, you know, you got to enjoy these cars, and the joy is found in the driving.
But low mileage for you is 100,000 miles.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I'm at 5.9. So the car that we had the party at Honda 2011 had 500 that day. Today it's at 591. So I'm inching slowly towards 600,000. Annually, that car only sees about 5K. So give me 2 years. We'll throw up. If you guys want to set up a little runner outside, we'll do a little party over here.
Yeah, we got space for a red carpet. Was that the one you drove in today?
No, similar. So that was
the legend.
Today's commuter was a four-door sedan. The 500K car was a two-door.
Oh, okay.
So twins, yeah, which is another topic for another day. Why the heck do I need two of the same car? Sometimes you just do.
Well, and you know, touching on restorations and everything, I wanted to get into that a little bit. I know we've don't have a ton of time left to have you here, but
yeah.
You've restored and sold 7 cars just on Auto Hunter alone.
Correct.
And there was one that I was following along online on your YouTube channel, the 94 Legend GS. I knew those cars existed. I had no idea they made them with a 6-speed manual.
Yeah, extremely rare, especially now. But it's kind of a rescue effort largely because I see these cars as almost like orphan children. I want to adopt them all and put them back to their showroom glory. And luckily for me, I've developed a network of resources when it comes to paint, interiors, refinishing of steering wheels, mechanical work, because restoring a car is not for the faint of heart. You can quickly get in over your head to where now you've got a basket case in the driveway that hasn't moved for 2 years. And so the other thing that I leverage is my friend enthusiast network. Like, I'm part of a Facebook group specifically for Acura Legends. There's 8,000 people in there. So if I need a clutch master cylinder and I post about it, you know, there's a marketplace there. So the trick for anybody looking to get into that is to get connected with the community for those cars, because people, it's one big happy family. People will help each other. And the sad reality is, like this 94 restoration you're talking about, a lot of the build components for that car have come from junkyard cars. I mean, I get email alerts from the U-Pull and Pay on Buckeye Avenue and 25th when they get an Acura Legend in stock, because I might need an interior door handle or a grill or whatever. And those parts have been discontinued for a decade and a half. So, you got to be resourceful. You got to think outside the box sometimes when it comes to sourcing stuff. But that car specifically, I hope I'm 90% there. I'm just waiting on the steering wheel come back from getting fresh leather put on it. And then the center console's being refinished. And then it's ready for photos.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, very exciting with that one.
Yeah, and you had I think you had an event at a dealership with that, right?
Yeah, so I have a great relationship with the general manager at one of the Acura stores in town. So I have a revolving display, we'll call it there, smack dab in the middle between the sales floor up front and the parts counter. I always have a car there. So I rotate it out every 6 weeks, what I'm showing. And it's great conversation piece for them. In fact, funny thing about that, they ended up after the second or third car, they said, we need you to put a not for sale sign on this, because there were too many people coming in there wanting to buy my vintage cars, and maybe potentially even drawing attention away from their new cars they're trying to sell.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, but it's fun for me, because I'll usually put a little flyer on the dash that says, you know, owned by Tyson. Here's some bullet points about why it's significant. And here's my Instagram channel to learn more. So it's fun.
Yeah, great place.
Yeah, and it's also nostalgia, because I can't tell you how many people contact me and say, I saw your 89 Prelude on the floor. I had one of those. You know, I think that's nostalgia is what drives this hobby. I mean, you just saw my Ford truck story. I would have never bought that truck if it weren't for the memories as a 10-year-old kid riding in one of those that my dad had, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it, you know, I found in so many cases, I know for me personally, like it starts when you're young, you mm-hmm. know, like you just, yeah, one of your parents or somebody in the neighborhood has it, and it just, the rest yeah. is history. I
mean, that imprint could have been with the Cavalier.
Well, I actually don't jinx me, but maybe I should go start looking at Cavalier used car listings. How much do you think I could find an 82 Cavalier two-door with the, you know, three-speed automatic?
How much change do you have in your pocket?
Yeah. So I'm laughing about it, but there is a community for every car. And actually, I have uber respect. One of my buddies in Michigan is devout specifically to those 80s GM box cars. And he's recently delved into, do you remember the Dustbuster vans, the Pontiac Silhouette,
the Transport,
the Oldsmobile was the Silhouette,
right?
Yeah. And the
Transport became the Montana after the Montana package correct. Took off.
Yeah. But to that point, like there's a community for those. There's a community for, I saw an article online recently about a gal who collects Saturns. I mean, who knew that there would be a community for that? And I kind of love that, because I appreciate people who are passionate about something, and I don't care whether it's a Geo Metro convertible or a Shelby Super Snake. You know, it's all part of this awesome hobby.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one of the things about it is, yeah, the cars are great, but it's like, it's better because of the human component, mm-hmm. you know, and sharing it with other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think part of what I love about being part of Collect Car Network is getting exposed to other communities. So back in January, I was part of a panel discussion at Barrett Jackson Scottsdale. It was me. I think I was with four other panelists, and each of us were asked to bring to the table two or three future collectible cars. And it was eye-opening to listen and hear and agree about other people's opinions on that matter, because nobody has a crystal ball to look at and say, in 12 years, the 93 Jeep Grand Cherokee Limited is going to be collectible. No, none of us know that, right? But we can make educated guesses, and that's basically what it winds up being. And, you know, we'll see who's right or wrong when the time comes.
Yeah.
So shall we go over our Auto Hunter picks for
Let's do it.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Who chose this one?
This was me.
Okay.
So,
good choice.
Yeah. Love these second gen Firebird Transams. This one really was a well-executed build. So what I loved about this, look at that awesome combo.
The interior.
Oh, phenomenal combo. So this is actually more than meets the eye. This car was actually, it's got the 400 cubic inch V8. This was built, restored by a company in Nebraska, just outside Lincoln, called Restore a Muscle Car. And in writing this listing for Auto Hunter a week or two ago, I started delving into the history of this company, and I realized they are experts on F-body cars. I mean, their sold history has a ton of these. And my favorite thing, I know you love the interior, go back to the, my favorite thing is how they took the original Snowflake design wheels, and these are 17s. So instead of the original 15s, they're actually an upsize. I think it's a really tasteful, kind of a modern approach to a vintage look.
Yeah, and they don't look overly big, you know, they fit the line still.
Agreed. And this car, you know, it's a shame. Sometimes I think, man, I wish this seller had a video, because this car, I bet that 400 cubic inch V8 has got to sound wicked. But yeah, I love this car. It was a fun one to write about. And to me, it speaks to, if I were in the market for something like that, I would want to buy it from a seller or dealer that specializes in that genre. And these guys definitely do. It's one of those builds that you can tell was all encompassing and, you know, covered not only the cosmetics, but the interior, the engine, mechanicals, and all that. So I'm anxious to see how this car does.
So next, Derek, thank you. Tyson, next, I believe it's you.
Yeah, so another GM performance car. So this one is a 69 Camaro. And this is relatively simple. I like the color combo. Now, originally, it started as, I believe, a Fathom Green. They had it refinished in Cortez Silver, and then they added these green stripes to it. So the combination of that neutral with that dark green, I think, is a great combination. Now, the inside was left green. That's, I can't remember the name of the green, but obviously a deep dark green, and then you've got a 4-speed under the hood. It's not the original engine, but it is a 350. So again, a great combination of 350, 4-speed, and just that nice, clean, neutral metallic with that dark green highlight.
Yeah, definitely a combo you don't see very often. I'd love to see the trim tag on that, and maybe even, you know, develop some sort of numbers, how many of these were ever even made in that combo, because that's definitely a rarity.
Those numbers don't exist, but don't forget this was originally a green car. So it's you know, in many ways this is a typical Camaro,
right?
You know, green, right, on green earth tones of the era.
It seems highly optioned too, with the buckets, the console, and the wood grain,
and the sawtooth gauges.
A lot of stuff going on there.
When does this auction end?
Let's see. I think on the 4th.
Okay, which is a Monday.
Yeah, so they're
4th?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, so plenty of time to get in bids on that one.
Awesome.
Thank you very much. Good pick. And for me, my pick is this 1963 Corvette Stingray. I find this one's kind of interesting because, you know, they're either cars that are butchered from like the 60s and 70s for the split windows, or they're obsessively stock. And this one is kind of a little bit in between. There's no butchering at all, but the paint job is not correct for a stock car. You have this burgundy. I want to say the color that they used had some wine connotation, but hey, burgundy also has wine connotation, so why not? And the tan interior, which I think is gorgeous with dark red, it has power windows. You can see the switches here, which is not a common option for Corvettes of that year. And it's powered by a 340 horsepower 327, which is the next step down from the fuel-injected car. Now, this car is not numbers matching, and I don't know what was the original engine other than a 327. So that's something that you prospective buyers and you need to contact the seller to find out more. But for now, let's just assume it was a 340. 327 originally. That's what's in it now, just not numbers matching. You can see it looks stock. So that's, you know, this is where it's kind of weird to me, because it's like the paint is not stock, but a lot of everything else is. So of course it's a split window, so it looks kind of nice from the
beautiful
back.
Yeah, love these.
So I kind of lean towards the 65s and 66s as far as the scoops on the side, but you can't beat a split window.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal design, and they're in a league of their own when it comes to the price point, because of being a 1 year only design. And I love the red line tires and the turbine wheels. Kind of like how you said, it's a good combination of not overly custom but also not obsessively stock. And the color, I don't know. I don't hate it. I kind of am a fan of that.
I find, with these, well, any car in general, but especially these older cars, restraint is your friend, because sometimes it can be a slippery slope as far as modifications, and they can just get kind of out of hand. And this one is very tasteful for, you know, what they have changed.
Agreed.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, it's tough in the, you know, like to your point with modifying a car, not everybody's tastes are going to align. And, you know, if you push those boundaries, you're at risk of, you know, jeopardizing your price point later down the road. But I would love to your point, Diego, to find out if they know anything more about this car's original configuration, because that could be fun to dig up.
Otherwise, that looks like our Drive the Bid podcast is coming to an end. So I would like to thank you, Tyson, for spending the time to come over here and educate us a little bit on Acuras and other things.
My pleasure. And thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you, Tyson. And we'd like to thank you for watching Auto Hunters Drive the Bid podcast. Please be sure to tune in next week. In the meantime, please go ahead and subscribe to the channel if you haven't already. And go ahead and click that like button and click the bell to make sure you get notifications about future episodes. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.